Since you... Oh, yes, you want to introduce that. I didn't,
Friday.
On the other side? Oh, no,
new
it's
tape.
On the...
Friday, December 6th, 1985, Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Harold Kimball and Ann Fagan interviewing Julian Past, tape 3, side 1.
Professional, huh? What I was curious to know, you were in Canada when the banks closed. Now you come back to Pittsburgh, right?
Yeah.
What was going on? What was the newspaper saying? How were people reacting to the closing of the banks and losing all their money?
Well,
do you remember?
How did they react to the depression? I mean, people were not, as a whole, were not in very good shape in those days. And I can't go into detail about how it was how it affected individuals. I'm sure that a great many people were embarrassed financially very much when their bank closed. I know that it affected my mother, because some of the investments which she had as a result after my father's death were in one of the banks that had closed, and that I'm sure she lost some of the investments as a result. But I can't go into detail about it. I know it affected everybody, to some extent. I don't think that it changed our style of living to any great extent, and I don't know that the Jewish community as a whole, the people that I knew, were greatly affected.
Do you have any memories of what was happening in the steel industry at that time?
No.
That was the period of strikes and unionization. No.
No,
recollections of what was going on there.
No, the great strikes, of course, were during Carnegie's time and Frick's time.
Mm-hmm.
That story came out in the papers recently. No, I can't go into detail about that. I didn't know.
Okay. Let's go now to something that I think you would like to talk about and that we would certainly like to hear about, and that is your traveling, particularly to unusual places in the world. Tell us what sticks in your memory.
Well, as I may have mentioned before, my wife and I couldn't do much traveling because our mothers lived respectively to the ages of 97 and 96 and had to be looked after. After their death, we started traveling, first to Spain and Portugal, then a very interesting trip to the Scandinavian countries, and...
This would be in what years, approximately, we're talking about?
I'd have to look it up.
60s, 70s, or is that...
Wait a minute. In the late 60s. Our first trip, we took two of Barbara's boys to the West Coast and then up to Canada. And that was a great trip. We hit all the national parks, and we got into the Canadian Rockies and had a wonderful trip. I drove 9,000 miles on that trip.
You would have been in your 70s then, would you?
I was about 70 at the time,
yes.
I think.
Yes.
We had a very interesting trip to the Scandinavian countries, as I said, a few years after that, including a visit to Norway. My mother-in-law had been to Norway at some time or other, and talked a great deal about seeing the midnight sun. So we decided we wanted to see it too. We were in Oslo and we took a plane up to the Arctic Circle and we got on a boat, a ship, which went around the top of Norway and led us off a short distance from this place that my mother-in-law talked about, with the name of which I can't remember now. We got on a bus, and the bus stopped occasionally where the natives were selling animal furs. And we looked at them and didn't care much for them. We got up to this place right at the top of Norway where we hoped to see the midnight sun. Unfortunately, it was raining and we never did see the sun. That evening, we went to a place not too far away. I forget how we got there, which in the winter is a school for native children, and in the summer they made a little hotel out of it. And there we saw some beautiful furs, reindeer skins, and we bought one. And they put it up in a package and said when we leave the next day, they'll give it to us. The next morning we went fishing in a fjord, which meant all you had to do is drop your line till it hit the bottom, pull it up, and there'd be a fish on there. And there were a few people, a few Americans in the group. Anyway, we had a very pleasant day and evening there, left the next day, flew back to Tromsø, was the name of the town above the Arctic Circle. And when we got there, we went into our little hotel. We had a little guide, and I remember very clearly her rushing in to see me, and she said, "Mr. Hest, would you open that package with the reindeer skin in it?" And I opened it. It was somebody's laundry. They'd given us the wrong package. So I didn't think I'd ever see the reindeer skin, but by gosh, a few weeks later, it came by mail.
Oh, amazing.
They're very honest people, the Norwegians. That was an interesting trip.
Mm-hmm.
It included Holland, Denmark, Copenhagen, and Norway.
I'd like to ask one question. During that period, there were no wars throughout the world. How were things in these countries you visited? Were they prosperous?
Yes, yes.
No problems like today's problems?
No. No. The bomb was not a
threat
at that time. Mm.
And Americans, I assume, were people who were liked. You didn't encounter any anti-American feelings at that time.
Of course, traveling was more expensive then. The dollar hadn't had taken such a great value as it has today. Well, another trip, we took two of Barbara's boys, two of the older ones, to Italy and to Switzerland. And that was a great trip. After seeing Rome and Venice and the various cities in Italy and the, what's the great drive?
The Appian. Afghan way.
Yeah, not the Afghan way, no, along the Mediterranean. Anyway, doesn't matter. Then we went into Switzerland and stayed overnight at Interlaken and went up the Jungfrau the next day. And we saw Luzern and we saw... And the hotel that we stayed at in Zurich was the Hotel Sonnenberg. And my grandchildren's name is Sonnenberg.
Did you speak any other languages besides English? Were you able to communicate?
My wife was very good at German.
Ah.
And I used to know French very well, but I've forgotten it all.
Did you use it on the trip at all?
A little bit. Not to any. Everybody speaks English in those countries. You don't have to speak their language. But my wife still knew and remembered her German when she had learned as a child through a Fräulein.
You mentioned a trip to Africa. That sounded especially interesting. Later.
Another trip we took to Switzerland, to the Riviera, with the two younger boys. And then we traveled all through France. Spent time in Paris.
Did you revisit?
I forgot to mention that before these trips, my wife and sister and another friend had made a trip to Ireland and England and Wales and Scotland. And we loved Ireland to such an extent that after our trip to France, we flew to London. And then we took the boys to Ireland. And I think that was, as far as they were concerned, that one day in Ireland was the best part of the whole trip.
Let's go back to France for a bit. You had been there during the First World War.
Yes.
Did you see many changes when you returned? What was it like to go back after all that time and see the country and its changes?
I hadn't seen France. All I had seen of France during the war was Paris, when we lived in the Etoile district, Blois, where I was stationed for a while in the gas service, and in Tours.
Did you return to those places?
I returned to Tours. Yes, I did. But they don't change, as far as I could see. They were pretty much as I remembered them, Blois particularly. We did go to Vouvray, because that's a town, a suburb of Tours, where a very well-known wine comes from, which we drank quite a bit of when I was stationed in Tours, and couldn't get it in this country at all. They claimed it didn't ship well. Now you can get it. But we went to the caves in Vouvray and saw where the wine was made and stored and so on. And we went to some of the famous castles in the castle country, which was one of the nicest part of the whole trip. That was the last trip that we made. My wife died, got cancer, and died a year later. We had bought this apartment because she wanted a garden.
What was the year that you moved here, the year of your wife's death?
72.
It's close enough.
Mm-hmm.
You traveled after her death.
And
as well,
after her death, I took a trip to Africa with David and Sylvia, who was then his wife. Mm-hmm. South Africa. July, we flew first to Amsterdam, and from Amsterdam to Johannesburg. And we were part of a group which was organized by a local travel agency. All of them from Pennsylvania, mostly from eastern Pennsylvania, and some from here. And it was a very interesting, exciting trip. We got into what was then called Rhodesia. We got into Botswana. Mm-hmm. We saw the famous Victoria Falls. Mm-hmm. And I have some great pictures, animal pictures, of elephants and antelopes and lions. And
how did you do that? Was that a safari kind of trip?
We took a safari through in South Africa. Most people safari in a northern section. Mm-hmm. But we were fortunate because South Africa at that time, as far as animals was concerned, was very much more interesting.
How did you travel? Was it a jeep safari? How did you?
We had part of it in a little plane.
Huh.
In little planes, and part of it in, that's a good question. Anyway.
I'd like to ask you a question. Since there's so much turmoil today, 1985 in South Africa, and it's making the news across the world, they're in rebellion, they want their independence. Now, you were there when there was no such feelings at all, is that correct?
I still remember seeing the blacks in the city of Johannesburg, the people that worked there. And every evening, they'd get on a train and go to one of the towns mm-hmm. where they were required to live at that time. But there was no revolution, there was no excitement at that time at all. Mm-hmm. The people seemed quite content. I don't know what's caused what's going on today. I don't know what stirred it up, but it certainly has been stirred up since then. But it was quite, the blacks seemed to be quite content at that time. The ones that we saw out in the, during the safari.
That's what I was going to ask you about. There were certainly black people with you on the safari. Did you get to talk with them? Did you have some sense of their feelings at all?
No. You mean, there were no people except people that were more or less servants
mm-hmm.
in places where we stayed.
Mm-hmm.
No, we didn't get a chance to talk to the blacks at all. I don't know if they spoke English, some of them.
But the city seemed to you then to be comfortable and
yes,
peaceful?
Johannesburg was a great, quite a great city, not as great as it is today. Just this week saw pictures of Africa at the travelogue.
Mm-hmm.
And Johannesburg is a very handsome city.
Modern, right?
Yeah,
very modern.
Did you get to Cape Town as well?
No,
to that?
No. We didn't go south of Johannesburg at all.
Could we go back to the safari and your comfort on the safari? Was it a reasonably comfortable trip
yes.
for you?
Yes. The places where we stayed, this travel agency, we saw, there's another company, a very famous travel agency called Lindblad.
Mm-hmm.
We ran into them at one of the places where we were staying. But we were comfortable everywhere. At Victoria Falls and all those different places.
Did you stay in tents ever?
Mm-hmm.
Did you stay in tents? Ever on the safari?
I remember once I guess it was almost the first day we got to this place out in the, where we saw the elephants for the first time, that David and Sylvia were sleeping in a tree that night. They had a ladder going up to the tree, and they had it fixed up with beds, with cots in it, and they slept in the tree.
My question would be, we have this image of Africa being hot. How hot was it on your trip?
Not unpleasantly hot, but I don't remember what month it was.
Oh, it depends.
It may have been in the early spring or even in the winter. Yeah. I don't remember. It may have been. But it was, at that time of the year, it wasn't
beastly.
It wasn't beastly hot, no.
Was it as you imagined it? Was the country as you expected?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, there's a great deal of rather barren land. The trees are quite different from anything we've got here. You don't see oak trees or maples or trees of that sort at all. It's not beautiful in any way, but it's interesting.
I think you mentioned that you pursued your interest in animals when you went on a whale watching.
Yes, that was about the last trip. Flew to San Diego and then got on a boat to go down to the Baja Peninsula. And there's a branch of the ocean, like a large fjord. It extends in quite a number of miles into the mainland. And that's where the whales are. Can you turn this off a minute? I've got a call.
Sure.
A number of years ago, one female whale approached a boat and became friendly with the people in that boat. And we know that whales can talk to each other. She must have told other females. Because when we got down there and got in a little motorboat holding six people, we went out into this fjord or whatever you call it, waited a while, and a mother whale arrived escorting a baby. It was only 15 feet long, the baby. It swam all around the boat and let everybody in the boat pat it.
Huh. Oh, how wonderful.
And the leather, it was just like feeling fine cordovan leather. Of course, the older ones have
barnacles
on them, and they're not so pleasant to pat. Yes. But we were able to pat the mother, too. And this happens a few times on the trip.
Must have been 1983.
Yes. What date was this whale watching trip?
February.
A year. 84.
No, it was before that.
Oh, really?
Late '70s, perhaps.
No, it was early '80s.
Early '80s, perhaps. Then maybe 82.
Maybe 80 or 81. I'm not sure.
All right. Were you? Did you go out from shore every day? Is that the way you did it, or did you live on a ship?
Yes, we went out in these little boats, little motorboats. The shore was interesting, the birds that you saw. We went on one trip along the shore and saw some extremely interesting birds that I'd never seen before. Hmm. And there were some people stationed there of some kind of a society, men and women both, who were keeping some kind of records. And I think they got to know the whales.
Yeah.
They could recognize them.
Mm-hmm. These were scientists studying the whales?
Yeah.
I see.
Mm-hmm. There are There were other boats we saw come down there, but we had a very nice group. I know it was February because just the day before we left, I celebrated one of my birthdays, mm-hmm. which is in February. Mm-hmm. That's a nice time of the year to go down there.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I would recommend to anybody. It's mm-hmm. a thrill.
How long were you doing this whale watching trip? How many days did you go out on
that bed? I think we were going down there almost a week. We stopped mm-hmm. at a few islands on the way.
Mm-hmm.
But the islands themselves, where we saw sea lions,
mm-hmm.
a whole colony of sea lions.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I happen to be very fond of all kinds of animals.
Yes.
And it was a real thrill to be able to see all these mm-hmm. various things. One of the other trips was to South America,
mm-hmm.
to the Galapagos Islands.
Where are they? It's the Greek island.
Did you go turtle watching
mm-hmm.
there?
No.
Mm-hmm.
The turtles were, they said, in a more or less inaccessible place, so
mm-hmm.
we didn't try to see them, but we saw all the other things.
South
America. Birds and the, mm-hmm. and the lizards and so forth.
Did you visit?
The seals.
Did you visit any cities in South America while you were there?
Yes. We got, our first city was Lima.
Peru.
Mm-hmm.
And then we took a bus trip. What's the matter? You finished?
Oh, no, I was just whispering to her.
No, the question is, do you have any impressions of the people in these countries, the conditions that you saw?
Yes. All these cities in South America had slums. Very low-grade housing conditions. And naturally, people in the country, as many of them as possible, would try to get in the cities, and when they got there, they had to live in these shacks. That's what you would call them. I saw shacks outside of Lima, which were about as crude as anything I've ever seen. Worse than anything in Appalachia, for instance.
Mm.
But we took a bus trip and we went down, and I can't remember the name of the town, but there's a very remarkable place down there where somebody at some time...
What's he talking about? Mm.
Is this still Peru that we're
yeah.
talking about? Yes.
Has made designs of animals and birds on the ground. You may have heard about these, which you can only see from an airplane distinctly.
Mm-hmm.
If you walk along on the ground, you see it. There's been a few inches gouged out in a design, but you can't tell walking next to it what the design is.
Mm-hmm.
When you get up in the airplane, you can see that they're birds or snakes or animals. We have no idea
who
did that
mm-hmm.
and how they did it.
You mean it's ancient? Ancient.
Ancient.
I think this is Machu
Picchu. We don't know
Picchu.
When or where or how.
Yes.
Some people, of course, get the idea that they were people from outer space that came
mm-hmm.
and did it. But I don't think the scientists believe that. But I have never seen a real explanation
mm-hmm.
of how they were made. There's one place where there's a line extending miles, absolutely straight, as though it had been done by a scientific instrument.
Yeah.
This is a very inaccessible place, isn't it? Did you have difficulty getting there?
No, it's not inaccessible at all.
Hmm.
No. And as I say, I was able to go up in an airplane and see the day and take pictures of it.
Hmm.
My pictures didn't turn out very good. The only way you can get it is to hold it out of the plane. And I couldn't do that.
No.
But that was exciting. And from that place, we took a bus trip up the Andes Mountains to a height of 14,000 feet where little animals like they used to make coats out of them, like llamas.
Angora. That's where angora comes from. 14,000 feet. How did you breathe up there? Was it hard to breathe?
No, I was almost that high at the Jungfrau, so I'd been up that high before. But and I took some pictures of these little animals, but they're a little too far away. And is that the name, Angora? No.
There's another.
Cashmere.
Cashmere.
It has the goat.